Coming up on Tech News Today, the next version of OS X is Mountain Lion, and we'll tell you what's inside of it. It's very iOS-like. Also, is Android 5 coming in the spring? We'll debate that rumor. And Facebook verifies famous people. What does it mean? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Thursday, February 16th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 15% off your new account for 6 months, go to Squarespace.com and use offer code TNT2. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Ayaz Akhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we kick around the tech news of the day, try to make some sense out of it. Joining us today, I'm very happy to have Martin Giles, U.S. technology correspondent from The Economist and oft-times co-host of the Babbage podcast there, which I'm a big fan of. Welcome, Martin.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us today. We're going to start off with Apple's big announcement about OS X Mountain Lion. They officially put it out there today, saying it will be available for consumers in summer of 2012. Not a particular date, but it should come sometime mid-year. A developer preview is available today. If you are a developer, you can download that. The biggest changes are to make it a little more iOS-like. The Messages app will replace iChat. Messages will continue to support AIM and Jabber and Google Talk and Yahoo Messenger, but it will also support the Messenger app on your iPhone and your iPad. And in fact, you can get a beta version of that today. You don't have to wait for that one. There's also Mac versions of other iOS apps like Notes and Reminders. Those will actually sync across your iOS devices. Game Center will allow you to play games with people who are on iOS devices from your Mac. There's a Notification Center that's similar to iOS coming to the Mac. There's also AirPlay mirroring, so you can send things from your Mac to your Apple TV. iCloud account integration in here. I mean, it's basically another move towards unifying these different platforms.
I think when Lion was first released, we all got a taste of a little bit of iOS behavior on OS X. It took a little bit of getting used to, but I mean, if you've used Lion long enough, it didn't take too long. This is just sort of the next iteration of that. What I like about it is that there are certain things that just make sense now. Calendar is called Calendar on the iPad, and it's called iCal on OS X. Well, why? If they're connected via iCloud, aren't they both called Calendar? So Mountain Lion's going to take care of things like that. It's just going to make everything seem a little bit straighter across the board. Having reminders on OS X when you already have reminders either on your iPhone or your iPad just makes sense. They didn't have an app in the App Store before now. So I like the way that this is going just because it requires me to think a little bit less about how are things different on these different operating systems.
What's been driving me a little nuts about this changeover with all this iOS stuff showing up on OS X is that the standardized UI that you had on OS X, this very unified interface, is just going by the wayside because everything looks like the iOS app. Instead of having the standardized, okay, everything's like gray and it's got this kind of certain look, now they just kind of look like iPad apps that are almost look like widgets, the way that some have a black border, some have this extra bit of like leather because it's at the calendar. I mean, it's a lot easier to see an expose and mission control and that kind of thing, but it's kind of this strange, slight departure from that unified look that Apple was always about when it came to, look, our guidelines say do it this way. Now, granted, it'll be a lot more unified when you're going from the iPad to the OS X machine, but it just seems a little bit of a strange move.
Martin, what's your take on this new Lion that it's stalking us?
Well, I think it's very impressive, and you've got a feature that you haven't mentioned, which is Gatekeeper, which allows you basically to only let apps that have been pre-approved by Apple run on the Mountain Lion system. So that's sort of an added level of security for those of us who are worried about bugs getting into the system. But I think there's a bigger game going on here as well. You know, Apple's done extremely well in getting its iPhones, its iPads into companies. You know, people have taken them them and are using them. But computers hasn't done so well. You know, the PC sort of, it's still a PC world out there in the corporate arena. But if you make your computers, your Macs, feel more sort of in sync with the iPad and the iPhone, then you know, more and more people are going to start saying to their employers, can I use these in the workplace too? And that's going to push Apple's sales up even further.
And that seems to be one of the effects that Gatekeeper could have, is it gives the enterprise some control over what gets installed on a machine. But I think what's going to rub some people, in fact, I've already seen some blog posts rubbing people the wrong way, is the fact that by default, only App Store and App Store signed apps can be installed. You have to go in and change the switch if you want to install things from third parties. And especially among folks who like to just go out and install open source applications and be free to install whatever they want, they're going to see this as another move towards Apple restricting what you can do with the machine that you bought.
Well, it's not really restricting anything. I mean, it's just a setting.
Not yet.
Yeah, it's the first step to complete lockdown. I don't know. Does it really bother you that much when it's just a simple, like, no, go ahead and choose a different option?
Well, I don't like that they made it by default, but I guess that is good security practice, right?
Yeah,
the fact that they do allow you to turn it off, that's fine. Also, you can force install an application even if it violates the switch. So if you're a power user who hasn't gone in and changed it and you try to install something, it will give you a warning and you can say, no, ignore the warning. I want to install it anyway. So that doesn't seem so bad.
On top of that, this version of OS X Mountain Lion isn't the official version by any means. It's still a long way before it's going to be released, right? So, I mean, the thing is, it could change by the time it actually is a final product, because we've seen that happen with iOS 5. Hey, that's a mute switch. No, it's not. So, I mean, who knows how this will actually shake out in the long run. But the other thing is, if Apple's going to go the route of locking down their systems to the point where you can't use anything but their App Store, I mean, that's just good news for any other operating system. I mean, like, I was talking about this morning. I'm like, look, if they're going to lock me out and I can't do what I want, I'm just going to use a different operating system. I don't really care that they want to lock me out. I'm just not going to use your system, because that's not how I want to use a computer.
Martin, do you think the benefits outweigh the disadvantages with something like Gatekeeper then?
I think I do. I mean, I agree with Sarah. It's a very easy process just to switch it off. And what I was quite surprised by was, again, you've got this very deep sort of Twitter integration. No sign of Facebook on there. I did notice that there was Sina Weibao, which is the Twitter equivalent in China, and Baidu. So obviously Apple trying to be still very nice to Chinese consumers. But Facebook, tough guys.
And a good point, expanded Chinese language support as well. So not a surprise that they're positioning themselves to sell better in that market as well. Let's move on to Google and Android 5.0. DigiTimes, you always take their word with a grain of salt, but they say that Android 5.0, known as Jelly Bean, may launch in the second quarter of this year. They're citing Taiwan-based supply chain makers who say that 5.0 will be more tablet-friendly and should integrate its Chrome system functions. Tell us a little more about this, IS.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, this is DigiTimes, so they're about 50-50 when it comes to this stuff. And so the vendors are saying that you might be able to get Android 5.0, and it might have Chrome functionality, so you'll do dual boot there. Not dual boot, you'll switch seamlessly. Or vendors will have the option of going between Chrome OS, no, sorry, Android 5.0, mixing them up, and Windows 8 on the same device without having to do a restart. Now, Reed Wright-Webb was thinking about this because last year, well, Ice Cream Sandwich was announced, and we didn't see it until November. So there's a chance, since Google I.O. is scheduled for June 27th through the 29th, we'll see it then. Not necessarily launch, because that seems a little bit early, because Ice Cream Sandwich just came out, I think, officially in November of last year on a device. November. So it took a long time for that to be realized. On top of that, Android and Me, they were guessing, AndroidandMe.com was guessing that we'll probably see 4.1, not 5.0 necessarily, at Google I.O. with devices that would land in September and October. So the real question is, what is Google going to do? What are you going to see at I.O.? I'm guessing you're probably going to see, they will announce, yeah, it's Jelly Bean. We are working on some things. And now here's what's really cool about 4.1.
Jason, what do you think? I mean, you're a host of All About Android. You follow this stuff pretty closely. Does that seem like the right vibe?
If you were to trust DigiTimes that they're going to come out with something in the second quarter, then I highly doubt it's going to be a 5.0. It's going to be an incremental upgrade to Ice Cream Sandwich of some sort, and that very well could happen. If what they're talking about is that Jelly Bean is going to be, you know, unveiled to some degree. Yeah, it's very likely it could happen at Google I.O. That's the way it was last year. And you probably won't even see any screenshots or anything of it. It's going to be, well, this is kind of what we're doing with Jelly Bean. You'll find out about more at a later date.
What percent of Android devices are even on Ice Cream
Sandwich? Exactly. I mean, 1%. Very,
very
small.
It's like, you want to alienate some people? Release 5.0.
Yeah.
Just do it.
It's crazy talk that Jelly Bean is going to be out.
I don't buy that.
Might get our first introduction.
Here's the difference, though, right? Now, we have Google buying Motorola Mobility. That's been approved. We're talking about a couple
Mostly approved. China still has. And Taiwan and Israel still.
The DOJ said okay. The EU said okay. So they have a couple more hurdles to go. But what could be different between now and June? They could have that locked up. They could actually show a concept device at least and go, look, you know, we have this Chrome OS thing sitting around. And I said this on the prediction show, that they were going to somehow merge those two. Chrome OS working as a desktop style interface while your smartphone moves to this, I guess, 5.0, this Jelly Bean thing. It seems like they have an opportunity to do it. I'm not expecting to see anything for sale by any means. There's no way they're going to have something ready by June.
Because that would be the ultimate slap in the face, especially considering, like you said, Sarah, 1% of devices, 1 to maybe 2%, and that's, you know, favorable compared to what it probably is. I mean, there's so many people with devices that would just love to have that update, let alone packing another one on 6 months later.
Right.
Now, Facebook is changing how they allow you to identify yourself on their system as long as you're really famous, right?
Yeah, if you're a celebrity, you're going to love verified accounts on Facebook. Also, if you have a pseudonym, the deal is that you might be familiar with how verified accounts work on Twitter. You've got that little check mark next to a person's name, and there was a process where you could submit yourself to say, hey, I want to make sure people know that I'm really the person that I'm representing. Facebook verified accounts are going to work a little bit differently. It's for prominent, as they say, prominent public figures, journalists, and celebrities that have a lot of people subscribing to their public updates. That's a part of profiles, not even pages right now, where I might have my account locked down to everybody on TNT, but I might have public updates that anybody can read every once in a while where I share a picture, that sort of thing. In order to get a verified account, though, Facebook will contact you. There's no submission process. If I was Lady Gaga, well, maybe Lady Gaga, the rules would be a little bit different. But technically, she can't go to Facebook and say, verify me. They have to seek her out and say, we're going to go ahead and turn this on for you because you have a lot of subscribers. The way that you would prove that you were the person that you say you are to get verified is to
sing.
Dance. That's not off. Her at all. No, you have to provide a government issued ID. Now, they say what's great about it is you provide an image of that ID, which I already think, like, gosh, you know, an ID could be fake.
Nice,
but
Photoshop.
Let's just say that it's the real ID. Facebook says, we won't keep that. Don't worry. We'll just verify you, and then that will go away.
We'll keep the image for 3 years.
Nobody will get your driver's license off of our servers, we promise. So you have to decide for yourself, if you're even chosen by Facebook, whether or not this sounds good to you. Starting to roll out today. I went ahead and logged back in. I don't think I'm cool enough. I don't think I'm celeb enough for Facebook to have pinged me about this.
Right. I'm still waiting for the call from Mark, and it hasn't come, unfortunately. But
Martin, us too.
I'm sure you guys get it before I do, but it seems to me that this is, you know, it's another effort by Facebook to try and get people to reveal to it, you know, exactly who they're interested in and what they want to follow. You know, Facebook doesn't want people following, you know, false leads. They want them to follow the real people so they can say, okay, I now know you're interested in Lady Gaga. Let me serve up some ads about her next album. But it's something they've got to do really carefully. I mean, there was a case where Twitter earlier this year had verified an account for Wendy Murdoch, the wife of Rupert Murdoch. It turns out it was actually a guy in England who decided to set this up as a spoof. So, you know, they're going to have to work really carefully to make sure that they get this right. Maybe those government-issued IDs are the ways to go, although you know, my false one might just get through.
Another thing that Facebook's opening up is pseudonyms. So this is a little bit of what Google Plus had to finally back down on, is like, okay, well, we're a service that requires your real name. Facebook will still require anyone's real name. Stephanie Germanotta is Lady Gaga's real name. That's going to have to be in her profile somewhere, but she can have her display name, anything that's searchable, anything that shows up in Facebook's you might want to subscribe to list. Yes, they have a suggested users list also, would be Lady Gaga, her pseudonym, again, if she can prove that she's actually the person. What's weird about this is besides something showing up in search more regularly and having a unified pseudonym anywhere that you participate in Facebook, there's no little check mark. There's no little verification, anything.
No visible symbol.
No visible symbol, which is... it's got me kind of thinking, I don't know. I mean, on Twitter, yeah. I mean, I'm not verified. Tom's not verified. It's like, it's not the end all be all, but it can be very helpful. When I land on a verified account that's got that little blue check mark, I go, okay, I know it's for
that's
sure.
That's Wendy Murdoch for sure.
For most of the time it works. On Facebook, there just isn't going to be anything like that. So I feel like this is more Facebook saying, hey, celebrities, you know, those people who have 2 million followers on Twitter, you should get active on Facebook because we'll let you act the way that you want to act and bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah, with the lack of having a badge or a verified symbol or something, it sounds like Facebook's asking the celebrity to go, look, it's up to you guys to find people who are fake. Tell us about it, and then we'll take it down for you. Because otherwise, I mean, Facebook doesn't seem like they're doing anything active to say, hey, look, yeah, this is the person we think
but
it
you
is.
You can't even campaign to become verified with Facebook. They are reaching out to people. Yeah, so that's then, what makes me think they're reaching out to Britney Spears and Piers Morgan. And
they reach
out
to you, and they're like, hey, tell you what, you continue to get verified as long as you want. But when you're verified, you can police it yourself, because then you can contact us. That's
right.
How you get to us.
That's true.
All right, let's take a quick break. Thank our sponsor, Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. It's what I use for a lot of my shows, a lot of my blogs. It makes it easy to make a good-looking website. Whether you're a CSS expert or you don't even know what that means, you can go to Squarespace right now and start a blog that looks great. Use one of their templates, tweak it to your heart's desire, either using their what you see is what you get, editing, or getting under the hood and changing the code. It's all up to you. Lots of new designs, lots of new templates. If you haven't checked out Squarespace in a while, go do so. It's absolutely free to try. You don't even need to put a credit card in. They're not trying to trick you or anything or make you cancel something later. Just go to Squarespace, try it out for yourself. You can have a blog up in seconds. And when you try it, if you decide to keep it, or if you're making a website for somebody else and you want to hand it over to them, make sure to use the code TNT2 and you'll get 15% off the first 6 months of your service. Squarespace is reliable. It takes care of the servers. It takes care of scalability. All you do is make sure that your site has all the content you want and looks the way you want. And you can use all their tools to make it look great. Check it out. Squarespace.com. TNT2 gets you 15% off for the first 6 months. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Onward into Intel. According to an Italian blog site, Netbook Italia, Fujitsu, speaking to reporters, showed a slide at a press conference yesterday indicating they think Windows 8 is coming in Q4 2012. It's not a bad guess anyway, but it is a little different to be in front of the press saying so if you're not Microsoft. The slide also suggested Fujitsu is prepping a Windows 8 tablet, which would be new for them. Now, Digitimes, once again, reporting that Intel is going to slow down the production of Ivy Bridge products. This report sounds like it might have a little more to it. They say they will ship a small volume of processors in early April as expected, but they'll delay the mass shipments until after June, according to sources from the folks who are making notebooks. The report attributes the delay to concerns over high Sandy Bridge inventories. They say the economy has been so slow that everybody's a little worried about how many Sandy Bridge processors are still out there unsold. They want to sell through those before they start flooding the market with Ivy Bridge-based machines. Notebook vendors believe the PC replacement trend is unlikely to start until after September, according to Digitimes, when Microsoft would launch Windows 8. Now, again, we don't know if Digitimes knows it's coming in September, but it seems, you know, given a couple of these different reports out here, that it's likely that everyone's coalescing around a fall release of Windows 8.
Yeah, Microsoft's representatives have said something close to like October. If you do some math, that's the way we launched 7. And the thing is, Microsoft's moving kind of fast. I think on it's 29th that they're introducing their is it customer preview or is it consumer preview? I forget the actual word. But they're developed
consumer
preview. Yep. That'll be out for people to try out. And unlike the old versions of Windows, they're not doing a whole lot of, well, feedback testing. Not like Windows 7 where, you know, I built Windows 7 kind of thing. They have a lot less beta testers. They aren't taking back the feedback the same kind of way other than what we've seen in the Building Windows 8 blog. So they could move it quite rapidly. And as for the Ivy Bridge situation, with the floods in Thailand messing up a lot of hard drives, it was hard to build whole systems. Sandy Bridge processors were sitting around too. The other thing is, Intel doesn't want to take a hit where they introduce Ivy Bridge processors for all, and then what do the sales look like? Nobody's buying them. People start worrying about that. It'll hurt their business in the long run. So it's a smart move by Intel to hold off Ivy Bridge to when the the actual market is ready to bear that kind of demand.
Yeah, it may be an unsubstantiated rumor, but it's a rumor that makes sense given the economic conditions on the ground. And I don't think it's a big shocker for someone to guess that Windows 8 would come out in the fall. Let's move on to Light Squared. Mr. Falcone is not done yet. Philip Falcone said he is committed to finding a solution to the interference problems that led U.S. regulators to reject his proposed nationwide wireless service. We've been following this story for a few days. He wrote in a statement today, this was not a decision based on science or technology, but was a politically motivated decision fueled by special interest groups in the GPS and telecom industry. There are solutions to this problem that can and will address the needs of the GPS community. So he's not given up. Wall Street Journal reports that they're even making a last-ditch effort to revive hope by attempting to exchange their wireless license for different licenses that would be similar to the ones the Department of Defense uses to operate and launch the GPS system. Falcone claims that he will not file for bankruptcy, that there are other ways around this, and he still wants to see LightSquared prevail. I don't know that I can see too many ways forward for him that are likely, but Martin, do you see any hope for Mr. Falcone's venture?
I really don't. You know, on the one hand, they're saying, you know, we can prove this stuff is safe. And on the other, they're saying, well, actually, you know, we'd really like to swap it. And, you know, I've been studying American sports since I arrived here, and the proper football. And I believe there's a sort of phrase that you use called the Hail Mary pass.
That's right.
That apparently Tom Brady tried to pull off in the Super Bowl and failed. Well, I think Philip Falcone is trying to pull off a Hail Mary pass here. He wants the Department of Defense, the taxpayer, basically, to catch this this spectrum because it's useless. To them, and they've already written it down, I think, on their accounts to from sort of $3 billion they invested in LightSquared to like $1.5 billion, and you know it was initially auctioned at $500 million. If the Department of Defense takes it back, I sure hope that they really drive a hard bargain. I just can't see any way around the technical issues here. You know, the NTIA, the National Telecoms and Information Administration, was very clear about the problems here, and you know LightSquared has had years to challenge them.
Yeah, you've mastered the metaphor, by the way, because thank Philip Falcone and Tom Brady look very similar to me right now.
I thought it was Eli Manning, but I got it right.
They're both married to supermodels. That's probably what you're confusing them with. No, but the thing is, when I saw this note about the Department of Defense and why would they want to swap with them, maybe the Department of Defense could actually use the spectrum that LightSquared had in a very concentrated way so that it's not going to interfere with GPS the same way as a consumer-wide network that was available to everyone in the United States with multiple carriers and running on LightSquared's network. So if you have a very focused military usage, they could just say, look, yeah, we're not going to run into GPS. Or the military could just go, look, you're going to change the GPS laws because we are not going to interfere with the GPS now.
Why don't just run GPS in that spectrum, too?
I think what Falcone said, I mean, he knows the nail in the coffin is that it's politically motivated by people who, you know, have money to give the government, who have interest in GPS working. So it's not just, hey, is this going to work with GPS? Well, we can shift a little few things around. LightSquared saying, just listen to us. We've got some solutions. It's the GPS industry saying, I don't really want these guys in business.
Well, I've heard a lot of people express the opinion that LightSquared just didn't handle this very well from a public relations standpoint, that they've sort of made these brash statements before, and that this is what you're going to get is a very tough reaction. Instead of wooing the GPS industry and kind of bringing them over to your side, they just sort of demanded that they change everything, and it didn't work. Let's finish up with new numbers from IHS iSupply on the tablet market. According to their estimates, in the fourth quarter, iPad shipments were 15.4 million. That's up 39% from the third quarter. But the total share of the global media tablet market fell to 57% from 64%. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that iPad had plus upwards of 80% of the market. So they're now down to 57%. Rhoda Alexander, senior manager of tablet and monitor research for IHS, attributes the fall to the iPhone 4S. The rollout of the 4S in October, she says, generated intense competition for Apple purchasers' disposable income, doing more to limit iPad shipments growth than competition from the Kindle Fire and other media tablets. That doesn't mean the Fire didn't do well. Amazon shipped 3.9 million Fire tablets in the fourth quarter, giving the company 14.3% of the market and knocking Samsung into third place. So Samsung, by the way, had a 16% rise from the third quarter. So they didn't do badly either, but their market share fell from 11% to 8%. So you can look at this and say Amazon probably hurt Samsung more than they hurt Apple. At least that seems to be IHS iSupply's opinion.
The weird thing is Apple had to lose market share. I mean, having 80% of a market is very, very difficult to maintain. I mean, they did that with the iPod, surprisingly, for a very long time. But the thing is, they were so far ahead that it took this long for the competitors to get something close and worthwhile to test out, because Samsung did a really good job trying to skin Android to make it usable on a tablet. I think it was their first tab. It was actually using Gingerbread with their own skin on top of it. Then Honeycomb showed up. They had a really good tablet as well. Then Android 4.0 shows up, so they have another thing. And Amazon's done their own like wondrous job with the Kindle and the Fire, that is, with their version of Android, to the point where people don't even know what's underneath. I mean, it is Android, but I don't think people are realizing that. It's just a consumption device that now people understand the concept of tablet PCs again. This is I still think about the old days where the tablet PCs were these slates and things that people didn't want. Apple says, hey, look, here's this marketplace again. And they don't have to do the education. Amazon could go, hey, look, it's just like the iPad, except smaller and cheaper.
I also think the iPad is expensive enough. So when you're in the first 6 months of a new product, iPad 2, it's very new and exciting and people want it. When you start to get past that six-month mark where you're now looking on the horizon of what the next iPad's going to be, then there are the people who say, well, we're 3 months out, probably. If all goes well, I'm going to wait.
I don't think it's a big surprise either to see Apple's market share fall. It kind of had to. I do think it's interesting that the implication here is that Apple people spend money with Apple. No matter what the products are, and they may shift from one to the other, but Apple's perfectly happy with that. Tim Cook has said, we don't have a problem if we lose sales to our own product. I do think it's interesting that you see Amazon taking market share from Samsung and the Android marketplace seeming to be sort of a zero-sum game there. Martin, do you have any thoughts on this report or what it implies?
Well, I think this issue about substitution is an excellent one, Tom. You put your finger on it. I mean, Apple doesn't really care so long as you stay within its ecosystem. Sarah is absolutely right. There's been lots of talk about the iPad 3 coming, so people may have said, okay, you know, I'm going to wait to see what that brings, because it's hopefully going to be, you know, a substantial improvement over 2. But I also think there's a third thing going on here, and that is that you've got, you know, a fatigue setting in to a certain extent with some of the marketing that Apple's been pushing out. There's like, let's just try and sample some of these other devices that are out there on the market. You know, if I'm like a marginal Apple buyer, I'm going to go and try something else. And actually, they've dramatically improved. You know, Samsung's stuff, it's not bad at all. And so I think, you know, all of a sudden you've got some more credible competitors. And Amazon, as I have said, you know, I think has done a terrific job with its Fire device. And, you know, the ecosystem of content that's behind it is very impressive.
And it's a very good point, considering we haven't seen a lot of tablets with ice cream sandwich out in the marketplace yet. I think in the fall, we'll see several models in competition, and that will be more of a true test of where things are going there. All right, let's take a quick travel through the news fuse. Travel? We're going to light it. We're not going to travel.
We're going to take a walk.
It's rather uncomfortable.
A stroll. Fuse stroll.
Library.nu and file.it closed down yesterday thanks to U.S. publishers and an international alliance. The sites received court orders in Ireland over copyright infringement. In other shutdown news, the U.S. Secret Service just suspended jotform.com as part of an investigation about content posted on the site. The site allowed users to generate forms. Now, the company says you can still access the forms if you have the right URL. If you have a jotform.com URL, change all the jotform.com's references to jotform.net. Sounds like jotform.com had a hard time getting a hold of the Secret Service to find out why they had been taken down. There's a lot of controversy about how this was applied, and it also has just been reported before we came on to record here that jotform.com has been given back by GoDaddy, and nobody knows exactly what GoDaddy's role in all of this was either, but we'll keep an eye on this.
The European Court of Justice says that social networks cannot be forced to filter their content to stop copyright infringement. Royalty collecting company SABAM Sabam asked a Belgium court to make a social network netlog to filter content. The court said, no, such a filter would interfere with freedom of information, personal data, and freedom of business.
According to the Wall Street Journal, AT&T is back on the prowl for more spectrum. Instead of salivating over T-Mobile's delicious spectrum, AT&T is looking at Dish. Metro PCS and Leap Wireless. Wall Street Journal says that Leap is the lead to be the partner with AT&T, while Metro PCS is the least likely due to its vocal and public opposition to the AT&T T-Mobile merger.
A delicious dish of spectrum.
Best served cold.
Mm.
Or transparent.
More or less. Like revenge.
Take a look at Patton Worse. A German court found that Motorola infringed on Apple's Slide to Unlock image patent, which gives Apple the ability to enjoin Motorola from selling Motorola products in Germany. However, if Motorola wins on an appeal, Apple would have to pay Moto all the money it didn't make during the banning, and Moto is likely to appeal, so it's not over for Motorola yet. There are more battles in the patent wars going on, too. Intellectual Ventures is suing T-Mobile, Sprint, and AT&T over some telecom patents. Apple was granted a patent that refers to an ornamental design for an electronic device which looks a lot like the wedge-shaped MacBook Air. So maybe there'll be some future lawsuits then from that.
Regarding the iPad trademark dispute we've been following, Apple made a statement to China Daily saying it bought the rights to the iPad trademark in 10 different countries from ProView years ago, and a Hong Kong court has sided with Apple in this matter. ProView issued its own statement saying the root cause of the dispute is Apple's underestimation of the legal complications in China. Meanwhile, Reuters reporting that Chinese retail stores in Shanghai and Qingdao are pulling iPads from shelves, and two major shopping malls have halted orders of the iPad because of this, yes, trademark battle.
The FBI could take down several DNS servers offline on March 8th that may lead to internet service interruptions for some. Now, the FBI installed these servers to combat the DNS Charger Trojan, which rerouted traffic to malware-infested sites. Thanks to the FBI servers, an infected machine would actually go to a safe FBI server instead. Well, the FBI would need a court order to extend the life of the servers beyond March 8th. So if you're worried about losing access and you're freaked out, just check your machine. Go to dcwg.org. And if you can clean your machine, you won't run into any problems.
Live streaming,
Mark. Are we supposed to trust the FBI servers? Is this something in America that we like giving information to the government rather than...
Absolutely. What's there not to trust?
I thought
they might take down your forms website without notice, but
FBI is a different agency from the Secret Service.
Well, you mentioned that it's all part of the government, so yeah.
We're the government. We're the people.
That's right.
Come on.
I keep forgetting
it's our
that.
Fault.
Sorry.
We are also not going to be able to watch all of March Madness for free this year.
Why?
If your cable company has a deal with Turner Sports, you'll still get it for free. But if they don't have a deal with cable with Turner Sports, the game is broadcast on CBS. Only desktop browsers can access the stream. Tablets and smartphones are locked out. If you want to watch any game at any time with any cable provider on any device, it'll cost you a one-time fee of $4. So there's a way to get it all, but it might cost you $4 depending on the situation.
Well, I don't like it.
Basketball or the $4?
I actually really like March Madness.
I think what this means is they feel like, hey, this streaming thing has been a success. They're doing it the right way. You give it away free at the beginning.
One-time fee, $4.
And then when people get popular, then you start charging.
Mm-hmm. Gonna make some money. The Indian government will require wireless carriers to provide its Department of Telecom location data about its subscribers in real time using latitudes and longitudes. The government is implementing this policy by putting amendments on operator licenses starting May 31st.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has asked automakers to make dashboards less distracting by disabling certain functions when the vehicle is not in park. GPS navigation and warning systems would still be operational while you're driving the car, but text messaging, phone dialing, and internet browsing would be disabled. Now remember, these are just voluntary guidelines, and there are no laws requiring automakers to do anything like this, but I'm pretty sure people are going to get ticked about this.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Martin, you seem to be very excited about this story, as were we. CSMonitor.com reporting that goats apparently have accents. This is the Christian Science Monitor's website that has the story, and I'm unable to scroll down to the relevant bit here, but essentially they did a study where they separated goats into two groups and measured their bleedings, I suppose, at 1 week, 5 weeks, and another interval, and found that in the early part, in the 1 week part, the bleedings were very different. But as time progressed, they got more similar to each other in the group while being different to the other group.
Yeah, 1 week, the kids' calls showed limited similarities to other members of their group.
Are those actual
That's
recordings?
The first group. That's okay. The second group.
Okay. Let's play it again.
That's the second group, and then it's going to go back to the first group here.
Oh, I did.
Yeah, see?
Posh accent on the first one, and a more working class goat.
Oh, come on!
It's a British accent on
no
the first.
No goat is born posh.
Was I that? That was it. That was what I was picking up on. I think you're right, Martin.
Kind of sounds like something's broken with the TriCaster. I don't know if
you know, they have their own social network. It's called Baidu.
That's why the second goat was the Chinese accent.
That's the Chinese goat.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
A much belated.
Obviously, goats with accents is interesting. But, there is an actual, like, academic importance to this story, which is that all mammals may have some sort of natural way of developing accents. This may not just be a human trait.
It helps to learn about the evolution of vocal learning. That's what they're saying.
There you go.
That way, when there's some goat that wanders onto your property, you say, "Speak, you don't belong here. You're from 30 miles down the road."
I guess so.
Something like that.
I wonder if there are any goat farmers out there like, "Oh, I've known this for years. I can always tell my goat's accent."
Yeah, totally.
From the other goats.
That's not my goat.
This is not my goat. It looks like my goat, but it doesn't
sound
like
my goat. Listen to the accent. It's obviously not my goat. All right, let's check the calendar.
New Twitter web design, or as it's known on Twitter, hashtag new Twitter, is now finally rolled out to all users. It was initially launched on December 8th of last year, but a lot of people didn't actually have it until now. So it's funny, I've been seeing a lot of people explain about new Twitter on Twitter, and I thought, again? Oh no, that's just the one from last year. Plants vs. Zombies has launched on BlackBerry's App World. It is $6.99. HP's Gorilla Glass-laden HP Envy 14 Spectre ships tomorrow, February 17th. The European Parliament has approved a January 2013 deadline for 4G spectrum free-up from 800 megahertz frequency bands, currently used for analog TV. Member nations have until the 1st of January next year to switch over to digital and authorize the band for its new role. And if you think, wow, that's not that far away, nations can obtain an exemption if they have a really good excuse. And finally, Clearwire CEO Eric Prush said on their Q4 earnings call to expect LTE by June 2013. The Spectrum will take over from WiMAX.
Let's take a look at what's incoming. Incoming message. Got a voicemail from Nebraska regarding our discussion yesterday about public internet in Georgia.
Hi, Tom. This is Cole Brodeen from Kearney, Nebraska, one of the states you mentioned in your article about Georgia yesterday banning public companies from internet. Nebraska, like you said, doesn't allow public companies to do internet, which I feel is ironic because we're an incredibly rural state. It could really benefit from it. And we're the only state to ban private companies from doing electricity. I work for a public power utility, and it's actually illegal for private industry to build electric utility companies in Nebraska. Just thought you guys would find that interesting. And try and help us in Nebraska get some public internet if you can. Thanks. Bye.
That is, I did not realize that in Nebraska, a private company could not make an electricity utility, but now a public company cannot make an internet utility in Nebraska. It's just, it's like I said, it's kind of crazy early times. I'm sure this will all shake out over the next 10 to 25 years. But in a state like Nebraska, where they really need rural internet, I can't imagine why the citizenry would allow that to happen. I don't know.
Sounds like undue influence a little bit.
Maybe.
I mean, because if the people were actually talking to the representative saying, hey, we want internet here, please.
Martin, have you followed this story much? It's a trend now for several states to outlaw the governments, like municipal governments particularly, from starting their own internet utilities.
I mean, I haven't been following it, Tom, but it sounds to me like, you know, the issue is one of fair competition. I mean, if these guys have pipes that are already going to homes in various ways and they can use them and other private competitors can't, then you've got an issue about fair competition. But then you've got to weigh that against the public good. If these are very rural areas and people will be deprived of internet access otherwise, then maybe there is a case for allowing public utilities to carry internet signals.
It's definitely a fight that is going to continue, I have a feeling, in several more states besides Georgia and South Carolina and Florida that are currently engaging in the battle right now. On to some emails to TNT@twit.tv. Jason was among several people who wrote in when I was complaining that I don't like using a tablet for a lot of things because I can't do the multitasking. I can't have multiple windows on the screen at once. He mentions a software called OnScreen, OnScreen.com/cornerstone. It is an open source project which could see it integrated into an Android ROM at some point. In fact, he points out that CyanogenMod is looking into using this software in its CM9 ROM, CyanogenMod being an alternative ROM that you can put on an Android phone. He says this idea may go the way many other projects, but thought I would let you know about it in case it became a reality in the future. And I'm excited. I hope it catches on because I do like the idea of having that kind of interface on my tablet. And it seems like even Microsoft is going the opposite direction.
You think so? Microsoft has that weird snapping feature on the left side. You have the ability to have a second kind of thing.
I want to try that out over time and see if that actually satisfies what I need. But
I love the idea that Windows goes towards the tablet area and the tablets are actually adding Windows. So maybe Microsoft's got it somewhere right in the middle.
Meet in the middle, exactly.
Last email from Shiela. Hey, y'all. She wrote y'all. I didn't say that. Thanks for the internet law news. Here's a link to read more about the proposed Georgia broadband legislation. She's got a link to peachpundit.com. Although the push for the law to get rid of tax redundant spending and encourage infrastructure growth by the large companies, it's a bit like killing a fly with a shotgun. In the rural areas where I've had a chance to talk to local small ISPs, no one has ever said that the large companies have ever been helpful. Mostly, they've tried to squash the local guys without providing a viable solution to rural ISPs' issues. In the city of Savannah, my home, I can't say the big companies have done much better. Comcast recently spent 4 days in town hall meetings because they screwed up their Xfinity rollout so much that the local government had to step in to quell the issues. If you live in Georgia or anywhere that broadband laws like these are on the books, take the time to write an official about it.
All right. Thanks for the emails, everybody. TNT at twit.tv is the place to go for that. If you want to suggest stories for us to cover, that's our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We look at it every day and see what folks are submitting, what they're voting up or voting down, and it helps us decide what we're going to cover on each show. So go there and sign up, technewstoday.reddit.com. Martin Giles, an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you have an event that The Economist is doing here fairly shortly in the Bay Area.
Yeah, we have a one-day innovation conference that looks at the way in which ideas are now being sourced from sort of all over the world. I mean, Silicon Valley absolutely is still the place to be, for, as far as I'm concerned, for great ideas. But I'm told that India, China, and elsewhere are now coming up with some wonderful ideas of their own. And we have some great speakers from companies like Cisco, Infosys, and Zynga who are going to be talking there. And also, as you mentioned at the beginning very kindly, Tom, we do a weekly podcast called Babbage, which is our attempt to basically try and in some small way emulate TNT. We have three little items each week on the tech world that I generally co-anchor.
You and Tom Standage do a great job on Babbage. I'm a big fan. In fact, I've ripped off a lot of ideas from you guys, so it's definitely two-way street. In fact, I always listen to Babbage, and I'm like, did we cover that? We missed that one. Damn. So check it out at economist.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, TNT at twit.tv, or give us a call. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. Of course, it's Friday tomorrow, so Darren Kitchen joins us. We'll see you then. We'll be right back.